ER101. In conjunction with the American College of Emergency Physicians, get the 411 on your 911. Here's your host, Dr. Lee Vinoker.
Hi, and welcome back to ER 101. Well, Bell's palsy is a condition that looks very similar to stroke, but there are major differences. And I want to introduce my next guest, who is an author of a new study that talked about it, Dr. Jahan Fahimi. He's an emergency physician in San Francisco. So welcome, Dr. Fahimi. So let's talk about this and describe what Bell's palsy is for people.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me on. Bell's palsy is this inflammatory disease that affects the facial nerve, which is one of the nerves that comes out of the base of the skull that goes to the face. It allows you to, close your eyes and puff out your cheeks and wrinkle your forehead. And the inflammation of that nerve, usually on one side of the face, causes partial or complete paralysis of that nerve. It can be quite striking when patients wake up from sleep and realize that their mouth is drooping and that they can't move one side of their face. It can be quite distressing.
And all these I can imagine.
And a lot of these patients present to the emergency room with the concern that they could be, in fact, having a stroke. And us as emergency physicians, a lot of times are equally perplexed. We have to, there's sort of a very detailed physical exam that we have to do, take a good history, and try and tease out the subtle differences between stroke and Bell's palsy.
Right. And we don't want people to think that, after you hear this, you can make that decision at home, because you should always, we talk about strokes or brain attacks and you got to get in right away. So wouldn't you recommend that anyone that wakes up with those symptoms needs to get to the ER or healthcare provider right away to assess it?
Absolutely. That's paramount. I am more than happy to see, people that are totally fine and just want to be checked out for stroke, rather than have people think that they know that this is not a stroke and then just kind of wait at home. The reality is that strokes generally don't hurt, which probably is what distinguishes them from a lot of other dangerous conditions that people rush to the ER for. And a lot of my other research is, in fact, on sort of delays for stroke victims to get to the ER. And so you're absolutely right. No delay. If you wake up with any concern for weakness, paralysis of one side of the body, one side of the face, I'd like to see you in my ER.
Okay. So describe, I guess in a little bit we can talk about maybe some of the causes of a Bell's palsy, but describe the differences in how you as a doctor figure out, okay, this is not a life-threatening stroke.
Sure. Well, it starts with just sort of the initial history of the patient, and I'm talking specifically about how old is the patient. If someone is 25 years old versus 75 years old, I kind of put them into different categories of risk for stroke, and I approach them slightly differently. Bell's palsy can occur at any age. It generally is around 40, 45 years old, so kind of right in that middle ground. For me, the key is I like to do a very thorough neurologic exam. If it's Bell's palsy, it should really truly only be limited to the face. Stroke may be predominantly in the face, but should have some other symptoms: arm weakness, leg weakness, speech problems, swallowing problems. And so those are, I think, key sort of clues to figure out what may be going on with the patient. Now, that being said, there are stroke syndromes that can occur and affect the face only. So it's not a
And I imagine, hard oh, excuse me. And I imagine, too, if your face is not moving very well, your speech might be a little bit. I mean, most of the speech is internally, your tongue and whatever.
Correct.
But when you come from the dentist and
Absolutely.
Your face, your lips have been numb, so your speech might be a little off just from having the facial paralysis, right?
Absolutely. The next step is to then really do a detailed exam, not just of the whole neurologic system, but of the face itself. And so, we have this kind of this dogma that has been passed on through medical school and residency training, that when you get Bell's palsy, it completely paralyzes the face. I mean, the entire face is involved, including, you know, the lower part around the eyes and even the forehead. And that's contrasted with, in a stroke, in theory, one should be able to wrinkle their forehead because of the way that the nerves supply the forehead, that nerves from the other side of the face can sort of compensate in a stroke, but they can't in Bell's palsy.
So when you say wrinkle, so you're talking about raising your eyebrows, right? So
correct.
If someone with Bell's palsy tries to raise their eyebrows, only the side that's not affected will raise, but theoretically somebody
exactly.
that's having a stroke can still raise both eyebrows. So what that's
absolutely.
Called what? Forehead sparing or something?
Forehead sparing, correct. Yeah, thank you for that clarification. That's perfect. But, you know, you'll see this frequently in the ER. You know, I will bring a colleague in the room and say, do you think this forehead wrinkles? And we kind of hem and haw about how much the forehead is wrinkling, and is it wrinkling compared to the other side? And so this is not there's no
don't
true
you hate
objective
when
measure.
The patients don't read the textbook and they come
exactly.
in without the clear-cut symptoms? It's so annoying when they just don't follow the rules, right?
Absolutely. I completely agree. And then there's a few other subtle things that, you know, clinicians should be clued into. You know, the taste over the tongue may be slightly affected. There may be this kind of sensation of numbness over the face when, in fact, it's not really numb. And those are kinds of things that doctors can test for as well.
So, and do you, as a physician, so I know we're all trying to reduce the exposure to radiation and CAT scans and things, but what do you generally do? If you're a little bit concerned or they're not wrinkling a little, and you're hemming and hawing, do you then just say, okay, let's get a CAT scan, or how do you work that out?
Well, I think it's case by case. In this instance, yeah, I think if I have a patient who's relatively high risk with respect to stroke risk factors, if I am not totally convinced about my physical exam, if, you know, they give me features that are more concerning towards stroke, then, yeah, I'll probably start with a CAT scan, and a lot of times I'll even get an MRI to really put the issue to rest. You know, obviously, stroke can be very devastating. It can be permanent. It could be a marker that a larger stroke is impending. So in that instance, if I have doubt, I want to know for sure, I will go forward and I will get some sort of advanced neurologic imaging. That being said, the overwhelming majority of patients I diagnose with Bell's palsy never get any X-ray or CT scan or MRI.
Okay. So what causes this? Or there's probably more than one cause. What do we tell people?
Yeah, so the biggest cause, or the number one cause, is what we call idiopathic, which basically means that we as physicians and we as scientists don't know. It's probably some inciting event, a virus, or something that triggers some immune response in our body that then causes inflammation of that facial nerve. Some people postulate that it's the virus itself that attacks the nerve. The herpes simplex virus that causes cold sores has been implicated in Bell's palsy cases. And, you know, if you're going to pick one sort of pathogen or one bug that you could implicate most consistently, that would probably be it. Now, that being said, your previous caller mentioned Lyme disease. That is absolutely one of the bugs that can cause a Bell's palsy or mimic a Bell's palsy. And then there's, you know, a whole host of other postulated theories as to what does it. But again, we don't really know.
Okay. So the key is get to your doctor, and the treatments may be different because the causes are different. This is ER 101. I'm Dr. Lee Van Oker on Radio MD. Stay well.